President Trump held a rally in Pennsylvania last night, hours after his top intelligence officials said definitively and emphatically that Russia was and still is behind election interference. Hours later, the president in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, said this about Russian interference and his summit with Vladimir Putin.
We got along really well. By the way, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. That's a really good thing. Now, we're being hindered by the Russian hoax. It's a hoax, okay?
The president made no mention of stepping up election security. Let's bring in our Friday Politics Roundtable. Sarah McCammon is NPR politics reporter. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there.
And Paul Kane is Washington Post congressional reporter. Paul, welcome to the roundtable.
Hey, thanks, Jeremy. Mm-hmm.
And no mention of election security by Trump last night, even though his intelligence and security officials said yesterday that Russia was seeking to undermine American democracy in 2018. What do you make of that?
I think it just really sticks to something we've seen for a long time. Trump doesn't like talking about this issue at all. Every once in a while, he gets backed into a corner and has to admit that the Russians did hack. They did do all of the things. It wasn't a 400-pound man in his parents' basement. But when he is out in front of his crowd, he doesn't like talking about it. And clearly part of it is he just thinks it delegitimizes his own election in 2016, and he just won't go there.
Yeah, but it's not just not talking about it. He's talking about it not being true. And Sarah, I want you to weigh in, but let's listen to some sound, because yesterday we heard the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, struggling to answer the question of, you know, about this disconnect between what the president's saying and what they were standing there and saying. And people, you know, asked him about, did maybe Trump talk with Putin? And here's what Coates said.
I'm not in a position to either understand fully or talk about what happened at Helsinki. I'll turn it over to
And he took it over to turn it over to Bolton. Sarah, we remember when Coates heard about Trump inviting Putin to the White House from Andrea Mitchell in the middle of an interview.
Right.
What's your sense of what's going on here? Do they sit in the big meeting that everybody has in the morning and say, okay, this afternoon, you top intelligence guys, you go out and say what we really need to start saying, which is we're going to stop the Russians from interfering. And then tonight, Mr. President, you go and say that it's a Russian hoax. What's happening?
I don't know what happens behind closed doors. I would love to be a fly on that wall, wouldn't we all? But, you know, there is what appears to be a disconnect here. And we've seen this over and over again, right, where the president, remember the week of the Helsinki summit with Vladimir Putin, where he stood up and basically refused to back up the U.S. intelligence community, refused to call out Putin, and then a couple days later walked that back by saying, well, I said, I don't know why it would be Russia, but I meant to say I don't know why it wouldn't be Russia that interfered. And there were multiple sort of ambiguous, conflicting, confusing statements about Russia just that week. Then in recent days, we've seen the president say on Twitter that, you know, basically acknowledge there is Russian interference, but claim with no evidence that they're trying to support Democrats, even after we heard Vladimir Putin say himself he had wanted Trump to win in 2016. So I was in that briefing yesterday with all of those intelligence officials who are all very much on message saying we're taking this seriously. This is real. Russia really is trying to interfere in multiple ways, both with our election infrastructure and by influencing public opinion. And we're trying to do something about it. And they said very clearly that the president is making this a top priority. Dan Coats said that, the intelligence director.
I know Jeremy's going to jump in here, but I just want to say in any other administration, that would be a little bit of a political coup. You know, that they were overthrowing, deliberately, defiantly going against the president. But here it just is sort of taken as normal.
But they publicly claim that they're not. And we don't know exactly what's happening. But then we do hear the president say things like he said last night, calling it a Russia hoax. Yeah. The one thing I want to say about that is that this is, in my mind, having followed the president from his campaign onward, this is very much in keeping with his rhetorical style. He says things that can be interpreted multiple ways.
Right.
And I think it leaves room for him to say this isn't I meant the Russia investigation, not Russian interference.
He's when you look back at some of his statements, he is very careful with the words that he uses so that he can say, oh, I meant this, in fact. Paul Kane, as this is all going on, we're also watching the Manafort trial. This is President Trump's former campaign chairman. Now, this is part of the Russia investigation, but this trial so far is not about Russia. How important is this trial as it continues in terms of what it means for the White House?
It means multiple things on sort of a legal and political front. The legal front is do they get Manafort on all of these other outside issues such as tax fraud, not registering as a foreign lobbyist? It's called FARA, the Foreign Agent Registry Act. If they get him and convict him on these issues, the question is whether or not Manafort would ever flip on Trump, if there is anything for him to flip on. And that would be a perilous position for the White House. On a political front, this special counsel really needs a victory, and this is sort of their first public foray into – granted, it's a closed-door trial. The public can't really just walk into it. But if they get a conviction, then we have something. Then we can see what they're doing. You've had this war, this rhetorical war against Mueller by Trump, and it really has cut into his own approval and believability, especially among Republican voters.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that, Sarah. The sense of what else might come of this trial. Might Paul Manafort, as this vise is squeezed on him, maybe be pushed into cooperating with Mueller's investigation? Do you get a sense of that, or of whether or not Trump is going to actually be interviewed by Mueller? We hear that Mueller might be willing to cut out some of the questions he might ask.
Right. I think there's a sense that by not talking to Mueller, Trump may be keeping this in the headlines longer than he needs to and dragging things out. But obviously, there's cautiousness on the part of his legal team about that sit down. I think given just what we know about the way Trump speaks and the way his words sometimes appear to contradict themselves, and he shoots from the hip. If I were his lawyer, I would be cautious. as far as the Manafort trial goes, right, I mean, one big question is, will he flip? So far, he doesn't seem like he's indicated any willingness to do that. He's gone to trial. We're in the fourth day of the trial right now. But as Paul alluded to, you know, one of the reasons this is important, aside from its importance to Manafort himself, is that this is sort of the first test of the first trial to come out of the Mueller inquiry, even though this isn't directly related to the question of Russian collusion. It did emerge from Mueller's investigation, right, and so all eyes are on it for that reason.
Paul Kane, we are less than 100 days away from the midterms. That is, of course, on a lot of people's minds in Washington. We saw this primary yesterday in Tennessee in the gubernatorial race, and a sitting congresswoman, Diane Black, lost badly for the Republican nomination. Trump had not weighed in on this. A lot of people are wondering what role Trump will play in the midterms. But do you think at this point there is a blue wave coming?
At this point, it's just hard to measure the size of the wave. It is definitely coming. We know that Democrats are going to pick up seats. You just look at the House of Representatives right now, and there's anywhere from 8 to 10 seats that the Republicans have almost conceded. So they need to get 23 seat gain to win the majority. Is it big enough to crest over there and get the majority? We still don't know. In years past, when they majority does flip, it usually doesn't flip in a small way. It goes big.
Well, and one of the factors in the midterms coming up might be the tariffs. We are seeing ads, we spoke about this yesterday, ads being put together by farmers, groups of farmers, against the tariffs and what it's doing to them. I'm holding a cartoon that I keep tacked up because I think it's important. It's by Gary Worvell. It's two people in a diner, a woman looking at her laptop, a man looking at his paper. The woman's laptop says, Russia, cone tapes, Manafort, border. The man is looking at 4.1% GDP, economy, jobs, record low unemployment, tax cuts, deregulation. Which is going to offset which, do you guess? Start with you, Paul.
So far, the economy hasn't resonated for Republicans. If you look at these special elections that there have been held since early last year, they have tried to run on the economy and things being good, and it just hasn't quite resonated. Go out to southwestern Pennsylvania earlier in the spring, Connor Lamb, the Democrat, right after the tax cuts got passed, the Republican tax cuts, he still broke through because that economic message wasn't resonating. And you're seeing it again in central Ohio, outside Columbus. There's a special election next week for a seat that's been held for 35 years in Republican hands. And they tried to make it about the economy and tax cuts, and it just didn't break through. And instead, they're just making it all about Nancy Pelosi, Republicans are.
And Sarah, do you think the White House seems confident that it's going to be those headlines in the paper, 4.1% GDP, economy, jobs?
Well, I mean, those are good headlines for the White House. Any president will take credit for strengthening the economy, and certainly this White House is. I think when it comes to the question of the tariffs and the fallout from President Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs, farm country is potentially a problem for him, and it's clear the White House is worried about that. We saw him in Iowa recently, and the Trump administration announcing that $12 billion bailout for farmers who've been hurt by retaliation from China. I noticed this week in my inbox the Trump campaign had sent out an announcement that they were selling all these hats that said "Make Farming Great Again." They're really trying to get farmers to stay with them.
That's Sarah McCammon of NPR and Paul Kane of The Washington Post. Thanks to both of you.